You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills. Accelerate your team's impact and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Brews and Appraisal Views podcast, where we blend the art of appraising with a touch of insight and a dash of humor. Whether you're a trainee, a seasoned professional, or just curious about the appraisal world, you've come to the right place. So grab your favorite brew, relax, and join us for some expert tips, real-world stories, and valuable advice to help grow your appraisal business. I'm your host, Dan Lindemann, certified appraiser serving South Florida for over 20 years. Hey, welcome back, appraisers. Dan Lindemann here. Today, we're going to dive into a new Learn Every Day platform. We're going to talk about some UAD, Val Expo, maybe talk about some AI in the appraisal profession. And we have Josh Wallet of Wallet Solutions joining us today. If you don't know Josh, why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Great. Thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, Dan. It's funny. We talked, it's probably been like, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago or something first about non-lending appraisals, which I know you really focus on. And so it came out of sort of an education approach as we talked on our first phone call. And so just a little bit about me. I am an instructor and educator in the valuation space. So we actually provide education to appraisers as well as to AMCs and lenders and other parties, as well as even training state regulators. And so I am a certified residential appraiser out of Colorado. I'm not in the field anymore. We provide all sorts of assistance. For example, our team will help an appraiser who has a complaint and help them navigate that with their attorney. We also help state regulators if they have a backlog to have some fair and consistent processes in evaluating and investigating those complaints. We will have policies and procedures for appraisal firms. And so we really take a look at the entire ecosystem. So that's a buzzword in our office, in our company quite a bit. We take a look at compliance, regulatory, valuation issues in the entire ecosystem. So yes, we take a look at appraisers, and then we take a look at all of those related folks around them, whether it's real estate agents, whether it's the lenders, whether it's the appraisal management teams. And so I became interested in that when HVCC came out, and then I just went from there as
absolutely things. That gave you the framework to actually put some this compliance stuff, help people out with compliance. My goodness.
Yeah.
What? So that's how it developed. Are there? It seems very unique. Are there any other companies that do this type of thing, like with the appraisal profession? It seems like you got like tentacles and everything.
Yeah. I mean, we really try to. I mean, I don't think of it as the tentacles and everything, but we do think of it. Oftentimes, we describe ourselves as sort of a puzzle piece in different clients' needs. Right. So they have their company, and they have different gaps and different missing pieces. And I don't know of another company that does what we do. There are some similar in the lending space only, but not really looking at the whole ecosystem. But we are pretty unique, and sometimes that's hard with messaging to clients and potential clients, and it, you know, just the whole ecosystem at large. They say, "Well, what do you do?" You know, we've had this. You know, I've been an appraiser for a long time, and then also this consulting company for about 5 years, right around COVID, actually, is right when we started, as it turns out. And I still get a few people saying, "Hey, Josh, we've known each other for 10, 15 years. I continue to see what you're doing. I continue to see your posts. What do you do?" And so, you know, most people do get it, but there's still, it's very unique, you know, it's very unique what we do. So
I didn't know you helped appraisers with complaints. I didn't know that. I just learned that right in your intro.
Right now, I'm just going to surprise you. So yeah, it's a need out there. And of course we always, you know, you heard just now, you know, complaints helping the appraiser, but also helping states. We've had a number and we have active state contracts right now. And we always look for any conflict, you know, but we can't work both sides of it, obviously, in any case.
So. Sure. But like for the state regulators, what are you doing? What do you do for them? Like what's an example?
Yeah. So for the state regulators, there are a lot of needs there as well. You know, we like to think, oh, the government, you know, okay, they're set. They're over there. They're established. They have funding problems. They have staffing problems. They have staffing problems in the sense that in some cases, they have staff who are regulating barbers and they're regulating teachers and they're regulating appraisers, and they don't have anyone with appraiser expertise. And that doesn't mean that they're doing it wrong. I mean, they gain that. But what we do for state regulators is we've done training. I actually went, it was 2 weeks. We probably didn't need the whole 2 weeks, but I went for 2 weeks to one state regulator a year or two ago. And we did a lot of training because they had almost an entirely new staff. We help with some of the intake in some cases to say, does this have merit? What are some of the high points that then their investigators can sort of look at this summary and say, all right, we're opening up an investigation or we're not. We've also helped the entire A to Z investigation process. So we have done, I'll get on a recorded call and interview the respondent and interview the witnesses and other parties to the investigation and then actually give a full investigative report to that state board. We also help with the work samples, a little bit of a smaller type contract in many cases. But when someone's applying to upgrade their license or initial application, we take a look at their work samples and evaluate those. So, you know, it's a big, broad spectrum because, again, there's sort of different puzzle pieces, different gaps in those state regulators' operations. Right. So it's pretty exciting and interesting. You see the good, the bad, and the ugly, and you need to recognize the good. I think a lot of the time there's this stereotype preconception, let's say, that, you know, okay, well, you know, a state board's going to find something. Well, you know, most state boards don't have that attitude. They're looking for, is this good work?
Egregious stuff that's hurting the public.
They're looking to be fair. You know,
yeah, so. And the profession is appraisal profession is just like any other profession. There's some bad apples in there, and that's going to get caught up in there.
Yeah, I remember one where I was asked to sort of sit in a special hearing that the respondent, the appraiser, had requested, and so the state sort of allowed that type of process. And in a break where both sort of sides, so to speak, were in private rooms, we broke it down. We were talking, and finally I said, all right, we need the big picture. Are we dealing with a good player or a bad player? Right. Like, this is, forget all these details. We're just getting lost in the details. And that's really what the state regulators try to do. But there are a lot of details, and you can get lost very easily and distracted very easily. So they really, most regulators are trying to do a very good job.
Yeah. So and the AMC side is just helping with compliance and setting up their systems, or what do you do? What's on that end?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll help set up some systems in some cases. We'll set up some quality control and review processes and forms. We will train. We do training on appraiser independence. We will do training on some basic use PAP so they know how to speak the language and speak to us as appraisers would talk. And then we also have a fair housing non-discrimination module for them as well. And this, you know, there are some requirements from states that AMCs must train their staff on. And then there's actually more from clients. Lenders go to the AMCs and say,
they're overlays.
Exactly. A lot of overlays, a lot of hoops to jump through. So we help them do that. Policies, procedures, again, ecosystem concept. If the AMC is failing or the appraiser is failing or the lender is failing, the whole thing falls apart. And so you need to give attention to each piece in that process. And that's what we do.
Right. And I could see that the lenders right now, that Fannie and Freddie are changing some things and slashing some old regulations. So it seems like the lender overlays are the problem with lender work, probably is just those overlays and not the main entities there.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think that's been that way for decades. It's been that way for so long. You know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, HUD, even VA, they'll change what their policy is, but it takes 6, 7, 8 years for many lenders to take those overlays away. And then some still never do. And you get this revision request that you think, oh, my goodness, what in the world are they asking for? That hasn't been a requirement for years, and it wasn't in the engagement. So it causes those types of problems. I think with the new UAD as well, and some of the new policies coming out, I think it's going to be I like to look at silver lining. I think it's an opportunity for everybody to sort of reset. I think it's an opportunity for appraisers to reset with their software. It's an opportunity for AMCs and lenders to understand what must be in these reports. And if you're asking for something extra, let's look at the reason and figure out why you're asking for extra. Is it even worthwhile asking for extra? Or should we just stick to the minimums of the secondary market or other types of requirements? So,
yeah, I can see that. So the new UAD, I know you're teaching a course on that. You're constantly teaching about that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So as an appraiser, what do you see? Do you see it taking much longer to complete an appraisal or just completing it differently in the same amount of time?
I think the answer is going to be different depending on the appraiser. So for example, when I was in the field, I always used a really good field app that helped me sketch it in the field. It helped me collect all the data, fill in many, many of the fields in the form. When I got back to the office, I really didn't have to do much rewriting.
Right.
All right. And those types of apps are going to be sort of ramped up, right? Because there's more data points to collect and things like this. So for example, I used to write sentences about repairs that I observed or, you know, repairs that were or deficiencies or damage or whatever. Now there are actually going to be fields in the very near future in that new UAD 3.6. So there are fields about repairs needed or deficiencies observed or things like this. So you know, it's not like we're observing different things, it's just being added to the report. So let's take the person who is using a field app right now. It's not going to be an entirely different world for them in that sense. Now, yes, the write-up of the sales comparison and the cost approach, it's taking on kind of a different form format. But I think the appraisers who are already using technology to a good extent are going to have an advantage. That's why when I talk to appraisers, we're really recommending if you are on a clipboard, that's your first step. Your first step isn't to look at the software out there, which, yes, I mean, we should. I'm not saying there's a first and second, really. But we cannot forget you need to get digital. It's not a requirement. I just don't see how it would be at all practical to have 5 sheets of paper and flipping through and recording everything. And then typing it in when you get back and all these extra fields, whereas those data collection apps are
there. Yeah. And they need to, they all need to be coming online at the same time when the UAD comes out, or else this is not going to work. Like, I know I have a software provider, which I don't like the field app, and I've never used it because I don't like it and I can't get used to it. And the process is not good. So it's been keeping me from going out with a more digital option here. I have a clipboard that I use still.
But well, it's not to say paper.
It's not going to work with all these fields. It's not going to work with my provider if they don't come out, if they don't step up their game and make it more user friendly. Because I would love going out in the field and just having it come back easily. So
yeah,
I don't know. I've been stuck there.
Yeah, I think from what I've seen at conferences and sort of what I've seen in announcements through email and the demos, this and that, I don't think there's any full demos out there at this moment. But as we get closer to the 2025 date in September, and then of course, you know, it'll ramp up even into 2026, I'm sure. I think we're seeing a revamping of everything. I mean, I think in terms of the appraisal writing software, the main piece of it, I think it looks like everyone's building it from the ground up. Right. All the software providers and some new software providers entering the marketplace to disrupt a little bit. Maybe everybody has to sharpen their tools.
Which is fantastic.
That's healthy, right?
Moving and innovating.
Exactly, exactly.
We're in the stone ages with some of this stuff, with the form and stuff.
We have. I mean, if you think about it, you know, and I don't have a problem with people who use a clipboard. I just don't see it as practical. So clipboard, we've used that since the beginning. We have the report writing softwares right now are, you know, yes, they have a lot of bells and whistles. You can integrate them with things, but really we're typing on a typewriter form. And so, you know, the innovation there is kind of limited because, well, you can't fit everything on a form anyway. And I really do see this as a good reset moment for it all. And
sure.
And we've been, you know, even things like the emphasis that we see from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac on market trends and market condition adjustments. And they've harped on that. And I don't mean that in a negative way. They just continue to emphasize it. And we see that emphasis in the new URAR, where they expect some different reporting. They have a lot of flexibility and fluidity in terms of, well, what exhibits, what visuals am I going to throw in? And I can put in what supports my conclusion. So they're not dictating it at this point. So, right. You know, and that's one of the things we did on our enrichment. We have a Learn Every Day platform. And we talked about market trends and market condition adjustments. How do we do it?
I don't think they want to dictate what the appraiser does. They just want them to do their job and do a thorough job and show support for this.
Right.
As an appraiser, if your market is, if that Case-Shiller index shows it going up 10% over the past year in your three zip codes or area codes, wherever it's from, and then your market analysis is showing something different, kind of like, you know, where did you come up with your market analysis? Explain that. Like, oh, this is just this section of the city that's been stable over the past couple of months, or it's been declining, something like that. Right. But I don't think a lot of appraisers were doing that at all.
Right. And it's, you know, analyzing market trends and not having unsupported conclusions about market trends is a USPAP issue. I mean, USPAP actually is, you know, very broad and general in many cases, but sometimes it really digs down. And so when those types of reports where nothing has really been researched in terms of the market trends and things like this, then and market conditions in general, that's a big hit in investigation. But in a more practical sense, it's you're missing the boat if you're not analyzing the market and then making appropriate adjustments, because we know markets move. And so, you know, that's just a really big legitimate criticism in some appraisers' work. You know, obviously there's a lot of good appraisers out there, but it's sort of a red flag, high dollar, you know, figuratively item in terms of things that you know, kind of get skipped.
Yeah. And
it was funny when we did a four-part webinar on market condition and market trends and adjustments. And we got really, really good feedback and folks saying, you know, I've never seen something laid out like this. We weren't doing it at a rocket science level. We were taking a look at some basic, these are some methods you can take a look at to see what's going on in the market. So it was really well received. And I just think it's a missing piece for some appraisers. And, you know, maybe it's bad training. Maybe it's not emphasized. I don't know what the genesis is, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but you can always see the government behind, because as the market shot up after COVID to that point, it was double digit gains. And now they're saying, okay, now we need to do market condition adjustments. Meanwhile, it should have been 5 years ago before the market appreciated rapidly. Now everything is stable to going down just a little bit. So,
yes.
Well, at least in, you know,
exactly. For the most part.
Yeah. But it's funny how delayed they are.
Right, right.
So your new platform, Learn Every Day. So tell the listeners a little bit about that and maybe see how they can fit in there, how you can help them.
Yes, yes, yeah. So Learn Every Day has been very exciting for us. It's been sort of a new endeavor. We started out, it was also known as Uppraiser, UPP. Uppraiser is what we sort of initially called it. But we recognized early on that this is actually having learning groups and community groups for more than appraisers. All right. So it's sort of our nickname internally and other people who we've talked to about. But we're really referring to it as Learn Every Day, AKA Uppraiser. And, you know, we have three primary groups in there. We've got the Power Hour, which I lead once a month. We've got
Hold on, stop right there. Let's talk about Power Hour and then we'll break down the other one. So what's Power Hour?
Power Hour is mainly for appraisers. Appraisers, it's a free group. You come to learn about maybe certain changes. So just recently we met and we were taking a look at some HUD changes and some Fannie Mae changes. And then we moved on to the sort of interview guest portion where we talked to two partners who run an appraisal firm, and that this is the Appraisal Brothers out of Texas that I'm thinking of. We've had you on the show as well, Dan. And we took a look with them at operating an appraisal firm with admin and assistants and how they work technology into their process. And it really took a look at how is a successful firm operating. And so that was really sort of the focus in that. And then we also spend a few minutes at the end on busting a few myths. All right. I think really what threw this whole learning community concept in my mind was just the constant misinformation that's out in the world on the internet. You know, you have appraiser groups that, you know, you ask a question, you get 99 answers and you don't know which one is right, if any of them. You know, you have people posting information as if it's fact and it's not. And it's really, and it can cause significant problems in someone's work. You know, they think that's the gospel and they move forward in that way and they do it for years. And so I like to call it myth information. You know, but we bust a few myths on that. And that's catching on. One of the keys is that it's live, but we record every one. So once you register for that group, you can go in and watch all the previously recorded ones. We post some of the reference materials we talked about during any of the sessions. So, you know, it's just a good resource, good resource.
So that's free to appraisers to sign up.
That's free. That's free. Absolutely.
And they
free.
Can ask questions. The one I was on there, people are asking questions. So everybody, it's like an open forum sometimes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's free to take themselves off mute. I tell people just if I don't see anyone, you know, waving their hand, just interrupt. No offense taken. And, you know, and there's also the chat. So it's kind of the typical ways you might choose to communicate on those online session.
That's fantastic because we're trying to do something similar where we're trying to connect appraisers locally, maybe by state or region, and do a similar type of Zoom thing or a Google Meet thing where they can get to know each other and collaborate more because, you know, like 2/3 of people don't belong to anything, don't belong to an association or anything like that. So it's very fragmented. So that was the solution. So your Power Hour is fantastic because awesome. That was kind of like a similar like a situation where you can see other appraisers around the country, you know, network with them a little and find out what they're doing in their market, which is extremely valuable to find out what your peers are doing. And because sitting in my office, what the hell do I know? I'm in my office right now. There's no appraisers near me. It's like, I need to call somebody to bounce an idea off of.
It's very isolating, right? And you know, there's different ideas of, you know, how do we get to this place where we're all independent in our offices and things like that. But there's also successful multi-appraiser offices. Yeah. But if you don't have that, it's not bad. It's not wrong. So yeah, but you do need to be in contact. Best practices. How do you analyze this data? Oh, I have a different data source. And you have creative ways and you bounce those ideas off each other. And I think we have even a bigger sort of problem to push back against because we have so much online learning like your CE classes now, which is wonderful, right? I'm in a rural area. I mean, we'd have to travel 4 to 5 hours often to get in-person education. So wow. Having online learning, wonderful, but you don't get that break time to chat with people. You don't get that lunchtime where you can go next door and you can chat about what you're doing. So you miss those opportunities. So I think what you're describing, in both our endeavors is it's necessary in a lot of respects.
Right. And it's just the new age of how you're networking now, I guess. If you're not in, just like probably dating, I met my wife in person and now everybody meets online. It's
I like wouldn't know what to do. It's just so crazy. Yeah.
And then the second group, world evaluation, what's that?
Yeah, world evaluation is anybody's welcome to register. This is the Power Hours of our free one. And then we have two other main groups that are there are fees to join. Very reasonable fees. But this is lenders, real estate agents, these types of periphery adjacent professions adjacent to the appraiser, although appraisers can also join as well. And this is really focusing, for example, two of the topics that I know are in the agenda for it are the UAD from the perspective of the user or other parties, even if they're not an intended user, and also ROVs, what are they to be looking for? So it's really tailored to the users or the other participants, not necessarily appraisers. Because we find there's a really big disconnect, right? I don't think this is going to be a surprise to a lot of appraisers, right? There's this disconnect where, why is this appraiser even calling me, right? And we've all heard no appraiser's ever called me to ask that question. And we don't know. Sometimes it's true, perhaps, and many times it might just be they don't want to answer the question or something, but they're not sure of, well, what should I be telling the appraiser and why are they even asking me? If they understood why an appraiser was asking certain questions, then we might have more productive conversations. And really in the end, everyone's trying to get the process to work. The appraiser is not there to try to get the loan to close. Don't misunderstand me, right? That's not the objective. But again, it goes back to that ecosystem. How are we going to have a healthy process if the parties don't know the role of the others and how to communicate and what to communicate on? And so that's really, I know that one is, they have a huge detailed agenda. We haven't gotten it all posted actually online, but I'm really excited for that, to really bring in these appraiser adjacent professions. And so that one's actually starting later this summer in 2025. So.
Well, that's very cool.
Yeah.
And we're going to pause for our sponsor, and then we'll get into Generation Next and what the other group is for that. So just bear with us real quick here. This episode is sponsored by the Appraisal Referral Network, a community built by appraisers for appraisers. Unlock new opportunities and earn more private work by leveraging peer-to-peer referrals. You'll also connect with nearby appraisers and access valuable lessons to expand your non-lender business. If you're ready to grow your income and reach new levels, head over to referappraisals.com and join the Appraisal Referral Network today. All right, welcome back with Josh. Let's dive into Generation Next. What is that?
All right, Generation Next is really an emphasis on the supervisor trainee model, the traditional model of training appraisers. But then it also goes even further, and it doesn't ignore trainees at all, but it focuses on the supervisor side of it. So when we look out at the profession, we see that we have Paria out there, which is it's become sort of one of the big three options, we could say, for training. It's sort of the virtual training, which has gotten a lot of traction. I think it's great to have different models for how you get into the profession. We also have the practicum, which is sort of like, if we could say, sort of pretend work. And I'm not cheapening it by saying that. I know several, actually, at this point, very good practicums out there. But it's basically saying it's non-client work. It's not real work. You're going through the sort of the motions there. And I'm drastically oversimplifying what it is. But then the third model, of course, is the traditional supervisor trainee model, which the other two are getting a lot of attention, a lot of support right now. And the trainee supervisor model is sort of kind of, well, what about that? We still have that. We can still do that. Especially for appraisers wanting to build their offices and their businesses, which, by the way, many appraisers, they keep the trainees and build their business. So a lot of times people think, oh, they're going to run off. Well, not if you handle the business right. And so we're really focusing on that. How can supervisors harness this traditional model to grow their business? How do trainees fit in? We have a very simple, almost like a personality survey, but it's not for personality. It's for what parts of the appraisal work do you like most? And so people can actually go in and take this. It's totally free on our site, and they can get a report back showing sort of, okay, well, out of these four sort of appraiser traits that we've defined, these are my strengths. This is my weakness. These are what I can do to enhance this strength. This is what I can do to really shore up this weakness. And it can help sort of understand, well, if I have these strengths, maybe I need to be partnering with someone who has these strengths and really build a better, because it's a two-way street, right? I mean, it's not that supervisors just give everything in that relationship. The trainees should be giving a lot. Oh,
totally agree.
You know, right. Oftentimes
that's from the trainees, right?
Yeah.
If the trainee needs to bring their value add to the appraiser, be like, hey, totally. You willing to take on a trainee, and the cert is like, no, not right now or whatever. They need to have their comeback. Like, oh, wait, I can do all your typing. I can do all your marketing. I can do all this or all that. They need to have their upsell to like their benefit to being part of your company.
Right. Right. Totally. Totally. And so that is, I'm really excited for that one. It is, I don't think there's quite anything like that out there. Again, very reasonable annual cost. The trainees actually get a 50% discount on top of that anyway. And there's not really that kind of work session or community like that to say, you know what, I'm not looking to just have lunch with this person in, you know, next door or down the street. I want to really harness folks from all over the country, find out what's working for them, what's not working for them, and have some experts really guide them on this. So I'm thrilled about that launching very shortly here in the summer of 2025. So
that's excellent. It's going to be a great service for appraisers.
Thanks.
You know, a couple of months ago, we did a podcast about, you know, jobs for appraisers, and you're maybe a good example of that. Like, hey, I used to be, or I still am, a certified appraiser, but this is what I dove into. Like, there's other things you can do with your license out there, which may be more up your speed than writing up reports and meeting with people. It may be exactly a direction you went in, which is fantastic with your valuation experience.
Be creative, right? I'm actually, even though I talk about, okay, we focus on regulations, compliance in, you know, in an overall sense, valuation techniques and operation, I'm a really creative person. And that's really where I looked around and I said, well, what can I do with this skill set? You know, sort of self-taught and also some education on the compliance and regulatory side, obviously an appraiser. What else can I do? And I think a lot of appraisers don't necessarily recognize their vast skill set. Appraisers have a big skill set. And so, you know, we could say, okay, if you're in mortgage appraisal, okay, take a look at non-lending. But even beyond that, do you want to, you could get a job at an assessor's office, not necessarily as an appraiser there, but maybe some other type of analyst, and your appraisal skills come through. You could work for, you know, a large attorney firm, you know, it maybe not as, you know, full time, you know, whatever the arrangement is, and you could provide services to them. All right. You know, you always want to make sure, am I an appraiser or an advocate in the situation, this and that. But I guess the point is there's so much appraisers can do. And I think a lot of appraisers sort of have, for whatever reason, maybe just financial reasons, different opportunities that they haven't seen around them, we sort of box ourselves in. And I think this is true in life sometimes. You know, we find, oh, this works, and we stay there. doesn't mean we have to stay there. And there's nothing wrong with staying there. But if you're looking for something else, there can be a lot of variety in what we do. And you start off slow in offering, you know, different services to agents, you know, different services to attorneys, you know, taking a look at what your state board needs. I mean, I'm not trying to promote competition for state board assistance that we do, but I mean, talk to your state board, see if they need some overflow support for right. their backlog on complaints. Maybe you can assist in some fashion.
Yeah, there's a couple of appraisers I know who do tax appeal, who do just on the government side. They're one of the, like, the magistrates that hear the appeal case, and they get paid really well, like $1,000 a day sometimes.
Yeah, I was an arbitrator just last year. That was really, really fun for the appeals. I had never been in that seat. I'd been the hearing, Colorado, they call it the hearing officer or hearing referee. I'd done that, but never arbitration option. And that was really interesting. I had to talk with some folks and really feel comfortable in what's my role as an arbitrator here. But yeah, there's a lot we can do with our skills.
Right. Yeah. Have you served on your state board?
I have. I served, it was around, I think I came off the board in 2019. Okay. And that was very interesting work. You know, in most states, I believe it's volunteer, you know, so you're not looking for, you know, other income.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. It's not a fee.
But my goodness, what great experience. What great experience. And not only do you learn as that board member, because you get to see all sorts of situations you never dreamed of, but you also can have a very positive influence on the whole process in your state. You know, having that reasonableness, having that fairness, that consistency, you can be part of that and ensure it happens as it should. And that, you know, good players are staying and bad players are, you know, maybe, you know, shown the door or encouraged right. to exit in different ways. So, I think, have you been on your board?
I have not. Okay. And I don't really have an interest.
You can, but that's the point, right? You can pick and choose what opportunities you want to take, you know? So, yeah.
So, all right, let's dive into, Val Expo. I think that's the next one coming up next month. You're going to be attending.
I am. Yes. Myself and some team members, we're going to be there.
Did you have a booth? Did you get a booth or what do you do there?
We did not get a booth. We're there for some of the education. We've kind of assigned different people one person is going to attend all the general session. I'll probably be in some of the general session. I don't always get the CE because I'm in and out, which is fine. But we generally go to these to learn, see what people are talking about, and also network and find business opportunities and, you know, fill needs that are out there. And so we generally set up meet us at whatever conference and there's a link and we've already had some people take advantage of that. And generally we'll go booth to booth and we'll take a look at the attendee list and we'll just set up meetings. And, you know, I almost think sometimes the education is secondary. Don't tell those conference folks that I said that, but you know, it's all of the opportunities there as in a holistic way, not just the education. So.
Right. And that's, I've never been to an expo or a trade show. I have never been to one yet.
You should
come. For the appraiser out there, why, like, is it the continuing ed? Is it the networking? What's the biggest, what do you think the number one thing is for an appraiser to go there? Not you, Josh, another appraiser. It was in the field.
I do think the education, because you can get CE credit. But what I tell people, and again, don't tell the conference folks I told you this, but all joking aside, I still think people need to look at other education as well, right? So what you get at conference is you get, you know, the 30-minute, the 60-minute, the 90-minute session on this topic. And then you get another, and all together, you get CE credit. And it's wonderful because it exposes you to all these current topics. But I still think I encourage people, hey, are you weak on the cost approach? Take a cost approach class, right? Don't just say, I hit my number. right? That's my warning always. But so I think especially for someone who is looking to be on top of all the current issues, go for the education. But there's usually awesome networking opportunities, right? There's, you know, there's sometimes, you know, like something happening at a restaurant and, you know, or there's something happening at like a golf place, you know, not like a golf course, but like, you know, a fun right. golf course. Or there's, you know, take a look over the list. Do you know anybody? Or, you know, getting to know people and, you know, going out to dinner and getting to know them better. Those are opportunities that are priceless. You can't really get that virtually in the same way. Same with booths. Stop at every booth and don't just do it for the stamp so you can enter the raffle for this or that. Go to the booth, learn what they can do for you, what their product is, learn some key folks' contact information so you can ask them questions as you go forward. So I guess I didn't really answer your question well because you asked like, what's the top? And I'm just like,
you mentioned a lot of good things. You answered it in a general way. So that was good. So I know we're coming up on some time here. I'm going to, I really thank you for being a guest today. I'm going to close this out and we're going to do, I think a few minutes for talking about AI and the future of the appraisal profession for our elite members. So some bonus content for them. So Josh, I really appreciate you being a guest. If you want to say goodbye to the appraisers and give them some maybe tip or something, I don't know what the what you want to do as a closeout.
Yeah, well, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's great to be able to talk virtually to a lot of folks and, you know, you feel like I'm in their living room and I just love being able to communicate with folks. So as far as like a last tip, be imaginative and never stop learning. That's why we called our platform Learn Every Day in the end, because it's not all about CE credit. It's not all about a formal class. It's about researching, it's about learning, it's about communication, and every day gaining something. And so I would just encourage you, we've got a lot of opportunities out there. Be imaginative of how you can fill the needs and find something that works for you, whether it's the type of work, whether it is how you operate and how you manage your office and how you build your staff. Be imaginative and talk to others. Maybe they've already solved the same problem you're dealing with.
Awesome advice. All right, Josh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Brews and Appraisal Views podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode and found some value in it, which you can apply to your appraisal business. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and leave a review. It really helps us reach more appraisers like you. For more tips and to connect with other appraisers, visit referappraisals.com. Until next time, keep brewing up success in your business, and I'll catch you on the next episode.